and welcome to Through the Mist with me, your host, Owen. This is a Warden vs. Day podcast where we look at the law and try to understand how it all works. In this episode, we'll be looking at the eternal nothingness. Hello, everybody! Welcome back! Hey, yeah, welcome back, everybody. This is episode 18, if you haven't read the title already. Welcome to any new people that have joined. I haven't said hello to any new people in a while, so anyone that's joined and I haven't said hello to you since you've started listening, hello, even though. Hello, new people. Hello, old people. Hello to Mistbusters. Hi to one and all. Remember, there's always ways you can join in with this podcast discussion, as I tried to make it a discussion at the start, people little talk, so you know, remember, there's always ways you can do. You can, if you follow the Instagrams, you can join us in this rambly section as one of the answers. The Instagrams is @through_mist, or you can always just email the podcast through.t.mist@gmail.com. There is links and text, and it's all written out in the descriptions. So you don't have to memorise, or if you can't quite understand what I said, it's down there. And as I mentioned, we had a Instagram question once again, and it was, what afterlife would you choose from the last episode? Because we had Damien on last episode. I hope everyone enjoyed it. It was a long one, I know, but you know, guests make episode longer. If you haven't listened to any other podcast before that doesn't have usually have a guest and has a guest, their guest episodes are always longer. It happens. But yes, we had a question, which is, what afterlife would you choose? Two responses from all of you guys, which is very poor showing, really. Come on, do better. We had one from our favourite Robert. And I've written their answers down in really some fun ways, because I wrote here, they really need to get a better sleep schedule, because all they wanted to do was sleep. They didn't care what afterlife it was, as long as they could sleep. They really, dude, you need to get a better sleep schedule, mate. And then we also had one of the guys from that answered the question for last time. You know, I never said week before. I just realised I may have said week, month. It's a month, Owen, not a week. You've been doing this now for that long. You should know these things. And they are hoping for death in glorious battle, because their sentence was, Valhalla sounds fun. Also, since I've been away, we have had a book announced for the Percy Jackson universe, which is very exciting. It's a Solangelo book and the Return of Bobitus, if they follow up on the dangling thread at the end of Toa. And when I said they, this is not the singular they, this is the, we have got Rick, and we have got this dude, I've forgotten his name, Mark I think it is. Go check them both out. Well, don't, you've already checked out Rick, but go show your love to the other dude, Mark. Ah, I'm going to have to Google it. Here we go. Mark, I was right, yes! Mark Ashiro, that was a long time for me, probably not so long for you. I have very slow internet right now. I'm in a hotel. Anywho, that's coming out. Go shove love to those people, Mark, and don't be nasty. I'm pointing at the people that are like, Rick has decided he wants help. Let him use the help. Let's do this thing. And then one more thing in this lovely tying up rambly section that I've got. After me and Darian recorded the episode, and after I posted it, Darian came back with a piece of information to me, which also proves a point, a piece of evidence, should I say, that proves their point about how the mist and death, and that you can, and whether you can see through the mist, or the mist affects you in death, and how dumb Grover is as a guy to mortal deaths. And it is when Percy is dying in Tartarus, in Who, you know, that whole sequence where, you know, ugh. And it is very highly I'll read what they sent to me better. There's this whole sequence where Percy can see what Tartarus truly looks like because he's dying. This implies that the mist doesn't alter the perception of the dead, which means that not that the whole want to see what they want to see in the afterlife thing does not check out. So it proves her point. We're good. They see what they see. They see the true form of everything when they're dead. Their minds can't explode, so they don't need to protect their minds. Haha, Owen's thinking. Right then, yes. That is fun. That's everything. Questions, new book, and Damien's further evidence to prove points. Yes. Ta-da! Okay then. The eternal nothingness. So, what do I mean by this? What are we doing? Why are we looking at this? So, it came about when I was reading the Magnus Chase last time. And the reason for doing this is trying to see if all the pantheons come from the same nothingness. So, and when I say nothingness, I mean the two that are explicitly given to us are Chaos and the Ginnungagap. And so to look at this and look at the nothingnesses and where everything came from, and we're going to see if we can link any of them together, which, you know, in this universe is kind of odd, but they're creation myths. I'm going to see if they can be like the same nothingness or if they are very distinct nothingnesses. Yeah, so we've got creation myths, and guys, just, I said this before at some point and I'm repeating it again. The basis for all creation myths are there was nothing, and then there was something. Okay? The basis for all creation myths ever, including the Big Bang, which is not necessarily a myth and more of a theory. A myth and a theory are very similar, really. Except a myth's been disproven, and a theory hasn't. Oh, that's a hot take, Owen. Yes, there was something, then there was nothing. So we're going to go through the different creation myths, one at a time, having some detours about some gods. And it's going to be exciting. Get ready to talk about the nothingness that was before. Okay, we're going to start in everyone's favourite spot. Well, I say everyone's. It's my favourite part to start, because it's the easiest to research. The Greco-Romans! Dun dun dun! The Greeks. We're going to look at the Greek creation myth. And just as I was wandering around the internet, I came across two main different versions. There's the Hesiod version, where Chaos came first. And that is the version that is kind of, that's the creation story. And that story starts with Chaos and ends with the 12 Olympians. So that includes the whole Aureus getting killed, Titan, Titans and the gods, but we're going to stop when the Titan stuff happens. So there's that version. There was also this other version, and there's a couple of different variations of this, but it's the whole idea, it's the world egg, where there was a different god and they lay a gold egg and out pops the universe. So in one of the ones I found, Nyx was the one to lay the egg and then it popped out. There was also, at one point, I saw Cronus came out of the egg first. Others, it was Chaos. It's all a bit iffy and offy. And this is like Orphreism, which is almost dissected into a different subset of ancient Greek religion. It was very hard to research. I ignored it because the ones in the books are very much Hesiod, and it's very much the big one that we all kind of know. As we start in any point of time, in the beginning, there was nothing but Chaos, a formless emptiness or void. She is the void. She was the nothingness. Chaos was the nothingness. I found a website which gendered all of the gods. So we're going to go through and we're going to gender them as we go. Yes. And then out of Chaos, Nyx was created. Night. Out of nothingness but the darkness. So Chaos created Nyx. And then together, maybe just Nyx, it's a bit iffy, they created Erebus, which was darkness itself. So Nyx and Erebus, night, darkness. Erebus, he, him, took Nyx, she, her, as his wife, and they had two offspring. The Aether, he, him, which is light, and Hemera, she, her, which was day. And also at some point appeared Gaia, earth, Tartarus, hell, and Eros, love. They all just kind of appeared. And then you get into the whole Uranus, Gaia, Titan stuff. So the story of how the earth appeared is just, it it just appeared out of nowhere. It just went, boop. But chaos went, but the emptiness void went, I'm going to create night and darkness. And then night and darkness created light and day. And then love just went, boop, into existence. And so did Tartarus. Just went, boop, into existence. The big pit itself. I have written here in my notes, I've labelled this section, the Greek deity sideshow. Well, we're going to look at three, which are completely useless, but just we don't really hear much about, and it was fun to research them and what they actually were. And we're also going to look at chaos, because that's where everything appeared from. Everything appeared in chaos. Yes, so, Erebus, which is darkness. So, his darkness covers not just the night darkness, but also darkness in caves and even the underworld. He was linked to the underworld and sometimes considered a region of the underworld. This is often considered the first region, so like the bit that they sail through which departed souls are said to have passed. They have to pass through Erebus to get into the underworld proper. Yeah, he's generally thought to be the primordial god that represents all areas of the underworld, causing it to be a dark place. And he's used to explain why it's dark not just at night. Why is it dark during the day? Erebus. He's the darkness of the underworld, which is, it's weird, isn't it? It's fun. So then you have Aether and Hemera, or light and day. And light in this sense is a bit odd. So Aether was linked to the upper air and was the air that the gods breathed. The air found just below the sky god and where the earliest Greeks believed the light came from. So the ball of bright light in the sky, the sun, that wasn't where all light came from. No, light came from like this layer in the upper atmosphere, and light came from there. So then probably the blue hue of the sky, that was light. So then you have Hemera, day, and every morning Hemera would push aside Nyx and Erebus, who worked together to bring the darkness of light, and by doing so would allow daylight to be seen again. At night time, Nyx and Erebus would come and cover underneath Aether. So Aether would still lie lighting up the sky, and then in the morning Hemera would go, get out the way, move, we gotta let the light back in, and then light would shine back down. I'm gonna put links to where all my sources for everything down below, and including these gods, so you know you can read up a bit more if you want, or at least see where I got them from. And then we have chaos, and name can be translated to gap. Remember that. It's not a big thing, but it's a fun little connection between a couple of bits in a bit. So, and its role she filled by becoming the air of the earth that sat between the air of the heavens, Aether, and the air of the underworld, Erebus. So like I said, it's so cool. And it wasn't really until the Romans where she became the source of all elements, those elements being earth, air, water, fire. Yes, thus the goddess becoming the origin of everything. So, thanks Ovid, the Roman poet, who kind of did that, at least in my research. Chaos as the origin of everything. In the books, it's definitely, like, really realised that way. And it is modern times as well. But actually, the Earth, Tartarus, so Gaia, Tartarus, and Eros, and that's the group that kind of, well, Gaia is the group that almost creates a lot of the other gods. You get Nyx as well, that creates a load of the monsters and the dark gods, literally, more than figuratively, as well as the really bright god Day, and Aether. So yeah, they just kind of appear out of nothingness, but chaos is also this nothingness. So they appear out of chaos, but chaos doesn't physically go out of her way, their way, to create them. They just kind of into existence, which is fun. Yeah, so that's Greek. A bit odd, but we all kind of knew it anyway. Now it's the Norse time, baby. So, in the beginning of Norse, there wasn't nothing. Well, there was nothing, but this nothing was the Ginnungagap. roughly translate to some form of like magical gap. Gap literally still being space between things. Because on one side of the gap was the world of fire, Niflheim, and on the other was the world of ice, Niflheim. So, you know, this was the place in between them. And slowly but surely, the ice from Niflheim and the fires from Niflheim met in the middle of the gap. From this, in this mist, in this fog, was born Ymir, the first of the giants. And from Ymir leapt the rest of the giant race. It was mainly from his sweat, each kind of sweated out giants. And Ymir was sustained by a cow. I've got the name of the cow here. I decided, I'm debating whether to give it a go. I'll give it a go. Audamala. And who is in turn, sustained by licking the salt licks in the ice. So licking the ice slowly and slowly and surely. So the cow eventually uncovered Bjormir just trapped in the ice. Where they came from originally? Well, Norse mythology has this whole cycle of death and rebirth. So maybe he was in the death beforehand. He's going to be like Thor's two sons that live through Ragnarok. And I had a tiny dim. Deep into Ragnarok as well while I was doing this. Anywho. And he is the first of the Æsir tribe gods. So the first of Odin, Thor and the rest of that lot. Odin being his grandson. Along with Vil and Vi, Odin's brothers. They go and kill Ymir because he's just like multiplying the giants. And they are out starting to worryingly outnumber the Æsir. Even though at this point Odin is kind of like a quarter giant or half giant. I can't. It's a family tree. And then, what do they do with Ymir? Ymir, the first giant? They create the Earth. They create Midgard. Middle Earth. The Earth in the middle of the gap. You see now? It's literally in the middle of the ice place and the fireplace. It's in the middle, so it's Midgard. That's where the name comes from. Middle Earth. Apparently Lord of the Rings also takes place here. It's in the middle of the world tree. It's the middle. It's mid. Doing hand signals that you can't see. I'm doing the thing from, you know. So, yes, they create the Earth. They got rocks from his bones, blood from the seas. From his blood, they create the seas, the rivers, the lakes, and oceans. And scree and stone from his teeth and molars and bone fragments. And then they surround the Earth, lands with the sea. Yeah, because, you know, Earth's flat. And from his skull, they make the sky, which they place above the four points. Held up by dwarves. These four points were held up by dwarves. And these dwarves' names translate to north, south, east, and west. The points on a compass, people. Look at how this flows. Love it. Also, at the end of the days, aka Ragnarok, the world would fall back into the Gap before being reborn again. So it's kind of there. And then it's going to plummet into the eternal nothingness of the Gap. Of the gap between Niflheim, Hufflheim, Mithsline, whatever, fire and ice. And so I went, okay, so we've got all that. And that lines up with the stories that we get from the books quite nicely, really. You get where the dwarves come from in the same stories. I just didn't want to go into it. I don't want to talk about maggots again. But I was like, but in the books, the world tree is also, when they go out to the world tree, when they're in there, they see this white expanse, which is supposed to be the Gungnagap. It's not dark for once. Ambiguous whether it's dark or light place, but it's a nothingness. Whether nothingness is pure blackness to you or pure whiteness. One of the two. Pure nothingness. The way our eyes work, it should be black. Yes. And I was like, okay, so where does the world tree come from? How does the world tree fit into this creation story? And there's very little consensus if the world tree even has its own origin. The world tree doesn't have an origin story. It just kind of is. The world tree is. That's all you need to know. The world tree is. That's it. That's all we got. So, you know, that doesn't line up nicely. But I like what Rick did and put the world tree in the gap. It makes sense, then. You could almost say that there was the world that when Niflheim and Niflheim were formed, they formed. And then maybe the ice and thing, and when that happened, a tree also sprouted. And that connect, and the tree spread through the gap, connecting the world. So, you know, it works. It's a nice way. I like what we did there. Egyptians. Ancient Egyptians. So ancient Egypt is old. Like, so damn old. They have a... I looked, they had... Wikipedia says they have four different creation myths, or five, I can't remember right now. One of them is also an egg. I would really like to know where this egg came from. If someone knows about the origin of the earth egg, because clearly the egg came first. Someone knows the origin of the earth egg, that would be great. Give it to me. I want to know more about eggs. But they're very hard to research. Because, you know, at least for Greek and Egyptian versions, But we're going to go with this version of the creation myth, because it seems to be, like, the most well-known. And also, there's hints and references to it within the books, and it kind of lines up. Not fully, but that doesn't really matter, but it lines up well enough for me to go, yeah, we can do this one. So, you ready for the sentence? The extraordinary sentence that starts all of these stories? In the beginning, there was nothing. Like I said, there was always nothing, then there was something. There was this nothingness, but this endless dark water. Sometimes I've got a name for it, Nu. Other times it doesn't really have a name. And it is this endless water without form or purpose. Basically, it's nothingness. It's a nothingness that you can kind of imagine as a sea. It's just this big sea of nothingness. And in some stories, which this is really nice, and it like it a lot, hidden within these waters was Heka, he, him, which is magic, or the god of magic, but just magic itself. And at some point, out of nowhere, rose the primordial hill, known as the Benben, upon which stood Atum. Atum, if you can't remember, is a form of Ra, become one of the aspects of Ra. So it's basically Ra, the first god, comes out on top of the Benben. Atum is up there, he's like, I've got no one to talk to. So he goes, I'm going to create Shu, the god of air, and Tefnut, the goddess of moisture. Every website I looked at also had a slightly different version of how these two were born out of Atum. Some of them a bit racier than others. But, it doesn't matter. He created them. That's all that matters. Boring bits happen. Shu and Tefnut, they go and explore the nothingness world that is this, and just the Benben. And Atum gets lonely again, so he sends out his eye, becoming the Eye of Ra, to go find them. And when they return, Atum cries so much that humans are born. And then they go, we need somewhere for these guys to live. So Shen and Tefnut go, we'll give this creation thing a go. And they mate. And they give birth to Jeb, the earth, and Nut, the sky. And the rest is pretty much just like the books. Jeb and Nut fall in love. Atum goes, no, you can't fall in love. That's a bit weird, even though it doesn't quite make sense. They're brother and sister, but, you know, Shu and Tufnut did it. They get separated. Nut's already pregnant. She gives birth to what? Oresis, Isis, Set, Nephilis, and Horus. That stuff happens. It's fun. Anyway, we have got another deity slideshow. This time Egyptian, with Heket, who is the god of magic and medicine. He is often depicted carrying a staff entwined with two serpents, aka he's the original George and Martha. He holds the original George and Martha, before George and Martha got linked to Hermes, and then that's why George and Martha are medicine-based as well, because Egyptian. You know, fun. So he's linked to both magic and medicine, as in ancient Egypt, magic was a significant part of the medicine practice. You would say a spell while administering medicine, because it's part of it. They're one and the same, guys. Duh. And reading enough about this stuff, the universe was created and given form by magical means, and magic sustained both the visible and the invisible worlds. Therefore, Hektet was thought to have been present at the creation and was like the power that the gods drew upon to create life, which is awesome. This guy isn't necessarily a god, he's part of the universe, he's part of the nothingness, but not. So there was nothingness and magic, together. Yes, And also, I want to have a quick look at someone we didn't mention in the story, because they're not part of it. She's not part of it. Yeah, it's a bit iffy. The goddess, truce of justice, harmony, and balance, Mat, as I keep on calling it, Mat, or Mat, you know what it is. So they're said to have been born at the sun god, Ra, Atum, bit iffy, at the beginning of creation, through the power of Hector, god of magic, as we just talked about. In the moment that Ra spoke the world into creation, they were born, and they're the spirits of harmony and balance infused the creation to cause the world to operate rationally according to purpose. So she's 42. She's the reason the answer's 42, guys. That's her. So the principle of Mat was the operational function of life, and that Hector magicked the power source of, for which this allowed. So Hecker is like the battery. Magic is the battery, and Mat, the order, is the motor. So Hecker supplies the power to make the world go round, and Mat is the one making the world go round. I just thought I'd bring it up because it's linked to the magic side of it a lot, and it helps with this linking between. And then that's the end of Egyptian Deity Sideshow. I should have come up with that. Is very Dr. Doofenshmirtz theme song. I should have come up with that one. Oh well. Okay then. So that is the three stories. They're quite simple. It's quite hard to research, but you know, they're the stories we're going with. So now we're going to try and link those stories to what we find out about in the books. So we get to see a sea of chaos in the Serpent's Shadow, which is an infinite ocean of chaotic power beneath the dawn. It is said to be from all this rose Mat in the rest of the world. It's the home of Apophis Shallow, and in the middle is an obelisk. So that sea of chaos is very similar to Nu, or the Endless Dark's Waters. However, certain things don't match good, like it being like a chaos rather than nothingness. But yeah, so the creation myth that we went with does link well with the book. So like you'd say, the Benben is this obelisk. Instead of a piece of land, it was this obelisk that rose. And from that, spread out Mat. So yeah, it links. It's a bit chaosy rather than, but then when Mat was born, when Ra was born, so was Apophis as his opposite and equal, because Mat is all about perfect balance, which is related to the books quite well as well. The other two, so Greek and Norse, they're very solid creation myth links. As I mentioned earlier, the world tree lives in the gap. The only extra add-on for the chaos is that it pulls you back into the void. It like is wanting you to go back and turn into nothingness with it. It created night and darkness, and then was like, and then too much happened, and wanted to suck everything back into itself. So what can we take away from these creation myths in relation to the Voidiverse? So we can look at this, look at the origin of magic, for example, and go, okay, so where did all this magic come from? And I'm getting fully to the point now where Robert, if I say something crazy enough and they can't quite follow, starts to make that strings guys on the wall meme, aka yeah, an official meme of the podcast. So if we take Hecker and on magic as like always exists in the universe and in some way part of the catalyst for creation of itself, the magic is part of the fabric of the universe, and magic helped form the pantheons and their stories because it was there before they were. It is the thing that created the something out of the nothing, is magic. Magic was almost nothing in the universe, and then it forms and creates the something. And that's, so it's intrinsically part of the world it creates. But then if we look at it in the wider universe, all the stories are true. Every single one of these are true all at once. Even the Big Bang, even the scientific, widely accepted current theory of how the universe started, which was there was nothing, then there was something, and this something expanded extremely rapidly. The Big Bang. However, has already established magic is part of the universe, but it has this circular push-pull dynamic with the collective consciousness, where human consciousness. So then you get to the question of, okay, so if magic creates these gods, the magic itself is just a tool. The magic itself, like human consciousness, forms these gods and these stories. But then what came first? The stories or the gods? Because these are creation myths we're looking at. These are myths that occur before humans are born. Except the Egyptian ones, where humans are born before the world. This is what is. I think I might have gone too far this time, basically. I am sat with this last point and this last set of questions of how do these all exist at once and what came first, human or pantheons? And I think I might have gone too far this time. I've tried to answer a question that shouldn't or doesn't want to be solved. They all exist together, yet separate, and we influence them, but they influence us. And we kind of just got to be satisfied, even in our day-to-day lives, that we would never truly know where we come from, where it all started. We just don't know. We will never know. There was nothing, and then there was something. We live in that something, and we have the power to shape that something, our world, our universe, our galaxy, into our image. And it's really cool, and you can make a really lovely metaphor, I think, between how human consciousness affects the gods, but the gods also affect human consciousness. Because if you think of it like this, so we have the power to influence nature, the nature of the universe. We have the power to influence that. Climate change, boom, right there. Someone created the steam engine, and this is the outcome of it. We changed the nature of our universe. We changed the nature of our planet. We've changed the nature of ourselves over time as well. But it will always influence us back. We can change nature, but nature can also change us. And we just have to make sure that when we get to these points where we're doing this balancing act between the two, we make sure that we push it in the right direction. Which I know is really deep for this podcast, but it's important. And with everything that's going on right now, as of recording, you got COP26 happening, which is, I mean, you can be cynical or man and go, well, they've had these talks before and nothing's happened. But it is really important. And for once, it might be a bit too late, but we got to try. And for once, things are happening all over the world on many different planes. You've got the environment, you've got racial issues, everything's happening. And you just got to make sure that you're there to help influence nature as nature influences you and push it in the right direction. You've got to make sure the change you make is a good one. So, with all that, have a good life, and ta-ra. See you next month. Thank you for indulging this theory. If you have any comments or theories of your own that you want me to discuss, you can email them through to foo.t.myth@gmail.com, or you can follow the Instagrams at foo_myth. Make sure to like the podcast, subscribe to the podcast, rate this podcast, do whatever you do to whatever platform you listen to get this podcast out there. I've been Owen, and come back next time as we try to see through the mist. Holy, you got deep. The deep's good.